reason we are here today is because the General Assembly has failed to do its constitutional duty and pass a balanced budget for the state before the end of the fiscal year. We have years of unbalanced budgets with over $5 billion in bills that sit in our office now that are unpaid.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10 and it is Thursday. It's June 9th, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell and welcome to another business day. That's Leslie Munger, the state comptroller, talking about the problems in Illinois with the budget. Another day has gone by with no action in Springfield. And there is a new map out today, lots of new maps out today, by, of all people, a geography student who has taken it upon herself to map out just how bad the problem is. When you and I look at graphics and maps, we generally get better clues and it seems more clearer to us what problems are. That's what she was thinking. She's put it in a map, and we're going to talk to her in just a moment. But first, the latest on the budget crisis. Governor Rauner criticizing House Democrats over canceling a session yesterday when there is no budget. The Republican told reporters yesterday that calling lawmakers into special session would be a waste because the House Speaker has no interest in doing anything.
The Speaker has been clear. He doesn't want to take votes on any of the bills we've introduced. And what we would end up doing is wasting time. I'm not into wasting time. If the Speaker would send any signal at all that he's ready to take votes, we should have them here. Right now, he's not indicating that at all.
Rauner promoted legislation in the House funding human services for the past year and other state government work through December. Just a little bit after the governor appeared, the state Senate president, John Cullerton, appeared for a news conference.
I want to work with this governor, but that requires him to start working and stop campaigning. With any luck, we can quickly see this agreement through, and he can get back to bad-mouthing me anytime he wants in the future.
Madigan did issue a statement yesterday that said that Rauner preferred buying office supplies to life-saving services, so you can see it is a fight back and forth. The new information this morning, a center at Illinois State University devoted to helping build small businesses plans to close this month because it will run out of money because of the state budget stalemate. Elizabeth Binning is director of the Illinois Small Business Development Center. You've probably heard of that here on the show and on WGN. Closing at the end of the month because they are out of money. A lot of people are out of money, and University of Illinois graduate student Melissa Heil has taken it upon herself to put it all on a map, dots on a map, to show you just how bad the problem is. She is with us this morning via Skype. And Melissa, thanks for being with us. First of all, give us a sense of why you decided to do this and what it's about.
One of the ways that you can represent data is through something called a dot density map, where dots can represent people or, in the cases of some of the maps on the site, the amount of money owed to social service agencies. So they're a good way to try to quickly wrap your head around kind of a really expansive issue, something that affects a lot of people, that uses a lot of resources. So that's kind of the story behind the dots.
Where did you get the idea to do this?
So I, as a geographer, we use maps to tell stories a lot. So I'm a teaching assistant in classes that deal with topics of poverty and inequality, both in the U.S. and globally. And so we use maps a lot in those classes to get students to understand those issues differently or to be able to see the scope of a big issue like global poverty in a new way. And so I thought that doing something similar for Illinois as we see the budget impasse would be a good way to help people wrap their minds around the problem, hopefully in a way that's pretty easy to understand, that doesn't involve reading a lot of reports, something that's accessible, something that they can share with friends and neighbors on social media, something that they can understand quickly.
You saw something that probably all of us have seen. We saw a story about an agency or an organization. In your case, you saw something about Lutheran Social Services that sort of prompted you to get involved. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So in January of this year, Lutheran Social Services of Illinois, which is the largest statewide social services provider, laid off 43% of their staff members. So I used to work in the nonprofit sector before coming to graduate school. And so I know you know, I know that a layoff of that size, laying off almost half of the staff of an agency like that, has a massive impact for, you know, first of all, for the people who were laid off, but, you know, the repercussions for people who rely on those services as well. So that's, you know, that's what really prompted me, was seeing something, an agency having such a dramatic level of layoffs, that made me think that this is, you know, a really huge issue, you know, knowing that that was just one agency. And so I became curious to see where the tentacles of this go. How broad of an issue is this?
And so what did you find with respect to human services, especially particularly?
Yeah. Well, so there's a wide variety of different aspects of human services that are being affected by this. The organization Illinois Partners for Human Services has recently put together a really wonderful report about, you know, the role of human services as an economic engine in Illinois. And one of the things that they point out that maybe would be surprising to a lot of people is that while we might expect, you know, the role of social services and human services to be important in the Chicagoland area, if you look at it on a per capita basis, you know, the cuts to human services in downstate Illinois are actually even stronger. That if you look at it as a in relationship to the number of people in poverty, the cuts that we're seeing to human services are having an even greater effect downstate.
Our conversation this morning is with Melissa Heil. She's a graduate student in geography and GIS science at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. The site, by the way, and you can follow on Twitter too, is at Austerity Atlas, and you can find it online at IllinoisAusterityAtlas.com. We'll continue our chat with Melissa.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors posted gains again on Wednesday. The Dow was up 67 points, closing just above 18,000. The S&P advanced 7. The NASDAQ composite was 13 points higher at the end of the trading session. Oil prices continued their steady uptick on Wednesday, rising above $51 a barrel amid turmoil in Nigeria, encouraging reports on China's growth and diminishing crude supplies. Watch for a continued rise in gasoline pump prices through the summer driving season. Air travel is getting a little cheaper, at least temporarily. The fare war that Southwest Airlines launched this week has been answered by American, United, JetBlue, and Virgin America, all of them offering seats under $97 on some routes served by Southwest. And a new report says bottled water consumption grew 120% between 2000 and 2015, while carbonated beverage consumption was falling 16%. Increasing concerns about the health effects of high sugar beverages have helped to push water sales. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 521. Welcome back to the program. Our conversation this morning with Melissa Heil, a graduate student at the Department of Geography and GIS Science at University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She's put together something called the Austerity Atlas, at Austerity Atlas on Twitter. Melissa, as we look at this map again, I'm just struck by all of these dots that are here, each representing about $10,000 owed to some sort of agency or social service provider. It really is stunning.
You know, this was a map created of where you know, where human service providers throughout the state are owed money. And so the way that I mapped that is based on the location of a service provider's headquarters. So there is, you know, when you look at the map, you see concentrations, of course, in Cook County and the surrounding counties. You see concentrations in Champaign County, right in the Springfield area, places that are population centers. So on some level, that makes sense. But also because I was mapping where the headquarters are located, some social service agencies serve many counties, particularly as you go downstate. So that has a bit of an effect of showing a concentration in some of those urban areas where some of that money is actually distributed across several states.
The other part of this was the reduced health department capacity. This struck me. 80% of these health departments have been impacted in some way by the budget. 80%, that's a high number.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, you know, that's based off of a survey from the Illinois Public Health Association. And so that's of 51 responding agencies throughout Illinois, and 80% of those have been affected in some way. So it's actually, it's interesting if you pay attention to some of the advocacy going around, going on about the state budget impasse, such as the coalition of organizations in Pay Now, which are suing the governor and other other elected officials in an attempt to receive payment for their services. There are several health departments who are a part of that coalition. So they're really seeing, you know, their services being reduced, their ability to provide public health services. And they do a lot of important work, right? They provide breast cancer screenings, HIV testing, other kinds of preventative public health work that, you know, that affects a lot of people, both individually and then also when we think about the whole population.
The you write on your blog that there were some striking examples of the budget impasse. You talked about a few of them already. It seems that all of the ones that have been highlighted here are ones that affect people who really need the services: health, autism, homelessness, MAP grants, those sorts of things.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's one of the reasons I wanted to create the site and to talk about it with people, to talk about the budget impasse, is because at the moment, I think a lot of the consequences are really being felt by many of the most vulnerable people in Illinois, and maybe the people who have fewer resources to speak out about it. So I think you're exactly right that, you know, the impacts are being felt by people who don't necessarily have the resources, you know, to be able to manage having these kinds of cuts or reduced opportunities in their lives.
And by the way, all of the data can be found at IllinoisAustericAtlas.com. I was struck also by something that somebody apparently told you after you after they saw this about the maps after they saw them. What did they tell you?
Yeah, so some of my favorite comments that I've received about the site have been things like, it's, you know, devastating and beautiful, or it's depressing as heck. And so I was really, you know, glad to see those kinds of comments. Particularly, right, the beautiful and devastating comment is interesting to me, because when you're trying to get people to pay attention to, you know, a serious topic like this, a potentially depressing topic, you need to remove any barriers to entry. And so something that's well designed, something that's clear and easy to see, I think has a big takes a big step in making it accessible to people, making it something people actually will spend time with.
Is it rare for geographers to have a social service, social impact, as you're having here, political impact almost?
I don't think so, actually. In the history of geography as a field, probably for the past 40 years or so, that's been a big emphasis in geography, is dealing with topics that are, you know, that have social relevance. So that's actually very common for geographers to do. It's not always communicated so directly to the public, right? Like other academics, oftentimes we're talking amongst ourselves or talking to, you know, to people in public policy positions. So, you know, that may be why this seems a little bit unfamiliar, because I'm really trying to, you know, talk to everyday Illinois residents with this.
This whole idea of GIS and GIS mapping, and some people may be familiar with it as a heat map or something like that. How important has that become in our social discourse and our discussion and understanding of the world around us?
Yeah, I think it's increasingly important, right? I think as we talk about a lot of social issues, a lot of them have a spatial aspect to them, right? When we talk about poverty, for example, right? We can see that poverty concentrates in certain places. So as geographers, we try to figure out, you know, why that is, why poverty persists in certain places, what we can do to reduce it. And it's also, I think, increasingly, you know, through social media, becoming a way that we share information with each other. So one of the things that I do with my students and we talk about as geographers is how do you interpret a map? How do you interpret a map that you might see, for example, on the New York Times? How can you critique it, because it's becoming something that's increasingly part of how we communicate with each other?
Melissa, thanks for being with us this morning via Skype from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. Melissa Heil, a graduate student in the Department of Geography, GIS Science there, who has created Illinois Austerity Atlas at Austerity Atlas. You can also find it again online at austerityatlas.com.
Now, WGN Radio's Daily Conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:39. K Jewelers, a popular mall chain, is finding itself under scrutiny again. A handful of brides first started reporting problems. Now, a national investigation is underway, not only into K Jewelers, but into other national chains as well. The allegations are that diamonds have been replaced with fakes when brides and others take their jewelry in to have it either repaired or fixed. It is a big deal, and it has garnered the attention of attorneys general in many states. The investigation ongoing. Kay's Jeweler, for its part, has denied any wrongdoing. We thought this would be a good idea to talk about the business of jewelry with maybe some advice on how to keep you safe, how to make sure you buy the best and the real stuff. And so we've gone to one of the family jewelers in Chicago that's been here for generations. The Helfer family has been importing diamonds and making jewelry for almost three generations in Chicago, first starting in Kankakee, now on Jewelers Row in Chicago. And Greg Helfer is the president and owner. He joins us this morning on The Opening Bell. Good morning, Greg. First of all, thanks for being with us. Let's talk about the jewelry business. How has it changed?
Business is different, but the company was actually started, it's had various names, but it was started by my grandfather in 1933, so we're third generation jewelers, my brother and I. And our father was in the business, our mother was in the business, our grandfather started out as a wholesaler, selling to stores all over the state of Illinois mainly, and that developed into the first independent chain of jewelry stores in Illinois. And that chain ceased to exist in 1991. And in 1993, we decided to approach the business from a different angle.
It's very rare these days to see still family-owned businesses that have been around for generations. What are the challenges of doing that?
Well, it depends from what standpoint you're talking about. First of all, there's family challenges, because it's always harder to work in a closely held business than it is, for example, in a larger corporation. There are other challenges being a small business, marketing yourself, getting your name out there, getting good feedback from your clients after you have provided a service for them. And there are so many. You know, we're located in Jewelers Row in Chicago, so in our building there's over 100 jewelers. We have positioned ourselves and have become more of a destination spot rather than competing with everyone else, meaning that most of our business is referral and word of mouth, actually, regardless of the marketing that we do. People will call us, make appointments, and come in to see us specifically in the building, which is helpful.
Jewelers Row is one of those historic places in Chicago that if people have never been there, they should just go and visit. But how has that landscape changed over the last 10 or 15 years?
Oh, my God, it's changed tremendously. Probably 15 years ago, in fact, if you go back a little further to 1993, when I first went into that building, 5 South Wabash, there were four main jewelry buildings within a block of there. There was 5 South Wabash, 5 North Wabash, 29 East Madison, and the Pittsfield building. Today, there's really just one main jewelry building left, which is the 5 South Wabash that we're in. 5 North Wabash is now condominiums. The Pittsfield building has turned into dorms. 29 East Madison still has few jewelers left in the building, but it's turned into other offices and a school. So the business has definitely shrunk, at least from the local business owner standpoint, while chain stores have obviously gotten larger.
I remember once when I was a little kid with my grandmother walking down the street near there, she said, she used to call me Stevie. She said, Stevie, there's so much money in these buildings. There's so much. It has been a big, huge business in the past. Is it still? I mean, is it? How expensive is it to buy jewelry?
It depends what you're buying, of course, but we focus on the fine jewelry market. So we focus on diamonds, semi-precious gems, rubies, emeralds, sapphires, high-end watches. We do a lot of custom design pieces. People still buy jewelry, and I think, you know, proof of that is look at all the chain stores that are out in the marketplace. We are position ourselves as a little bit higher quality than the chain stores. We don't mass produce what we sell. Much of what we sell, probably over 75% of it, is custom made.
Back to the challenges of this, the new customer base, I would suppose, is the millennials. We hear all about the millennials.
Yes.
Are they buying jewelry?
They're buying jewelry, but they're buying it differently, I would say. The millennials are more interested, we have found, in experiences rather than perhaps material items. So what happens is the challenge becomes, how do you get the millennials into your shop when they're so used to buying on the internet? Now, I'm certainly not a millennial, but I buy there's certain things I'll buy on the internet, but when you're spending $10,000 or $15,000 or even $2,000 on an engagement ring or something that signifies a significant moment in one's life, it seems to me that most people would like to be able to have a one-on-one interaction, be able to get in somebody's face if there was a problem with something, which is something that that's something that the internet can't provide. The internet can't provide. It can provide quick service, but it can't provide personalized, you know, one-on-one service.
Is the experience part of this for the millennials too, about creating something that is special? Is it more geared toward a technological aspect? Is it an event in their lives? When you say the event, what do you mean?
Well, I'm talking like an engagement, for example. So, you know, if you go into a chain store, for example, you'll see, and you could go into three or four different chain stores and you'll see hundreds of rings. And for the most part, all of them look very similar. I'm talking about from store to store. You can come to us with pictures of five different rings, tell me what you like about each one of them, and we can combine them into one design that's a one-of-a-kind piece to signify. It doesn't have to necessarily be an engagement, an anniversary, an important milestone in one's life, a graduation.
Do people still mark their milestones with the gold for the 50th and the diamond, is it, for the 25th?
They mark their milestones with gifts, but they don't necessarily go by the old list of what all the anniversaries were.
Is there a danger these days in buying jewelry, and how do you set yourself apart as a wholesaler and a destination from the chain places that you've talked about?
So, well, you know, we sell to both stores and to the public. I guess the dangers are, which would be in any industry, you need to trust who you deal with, and you have to develop a relationship with someone, especially somebody that is putting their trust in you and spending thousands of dollars potentially on something. And so earning people's trust, providing good service, delivering the product when you say you're going to deliver it, these are all things that used to be more ancillary to the product, but now it's, I would say, part of an entire package that you have to really provide everything to the client in order to stand out.
We've heard in recent weeks about fake products. There have been reports, we won't name names, but this is a danger when you go, that you may not be getting a real diamond or you may not be getting a real gemstone.
Again, that revolves around trust. And there's also been instances in the past week or so, there was a major national chain store that we don't have to name, obviously, that has been accused of switching clients' diamonds out. There are also instances where smaller jewelers have switched diamonds out with fake stones. It all boils back down, in my opinion, to trust and developing a relationship with who you're working with. And in any industry, I want to say, you have to trust who you deal with, whether you're going to a doctor or buying a car or going to a lawyer, an accountant. There's a level of trust that you have to build with the people you're working with.
Greg Helfer is the president and CEO of the Helfer Jeweler Chain in Chicago. It's actually a family-owned business with the business of jewelry today. You can find Greg Helfer online at the helferfamily.com and helferjewelers.com. They've been on jewelry roll for almost 30 years.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
5:53, back on The Opening Bell on the WGN Market Desk this morning. Futures are pointing toward a pullback this morning. The Dow, NASDAQ, S&P futures are all lower, indicating a lower open on Wall Street this morning. The Dow off about 46. The latest on commodities now, here's Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. It was a rather unusual day in both the grain and livestock markets yesterday. Live cattle futures posted sharp gains. Technical buying, funds came in, and much improved wholesale beef demand. Apparently, retail and restaurant purchase of beef for Father's Day and 4th of July featuring helped lift the beef cutout value for a third straight day. As a result, cattle for the month of August up $2.72 at $118.72. The hog trade at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange moved higher for basically the same reason. Turnaround in wholesale pork prices and the steep climb in cattle futures, and that sent the July lean hog contract up 75 cents to end at $87.02. That's your money on 720 WGN.
Thanks, Orion. Have a great day. We'll continue to follow your money all through the morning on the Steve Cochran Show, which is coming up next. Don't go away. And also, we'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning with another edition of The Opening Bell.